The following paid commercial program was furnished by the program sponsor. The WYSL stations present an hour of truth for the battered but proud people of the Empire State. From the financial and entertainment epicenter of New York City to the sleeping and empty small cities and towns of upstate, which once bustled with manufacturing, mining, and farming. We all know from inspiration, history, and nature, we deserve a return to the success and growth of generations past, a birthright being squandered by corruption in Albany, and the depredations of an insecure, scheming mountebank posing as governor, who loathes both us and himself. As liberty beckoned to enslaved peoples behind the Iron Curtain via American broadcasts after World War II, we now say, believe, rise, and join us. Welcome to Radio Free New York with your intrepid hosts, Andrew C. Hollister. Is it C. Hollister?
It is C. Yep.
Andrew
yep.
PDQ Hollister. And here he is.
And I'm here with Bob Savage. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Just a real brief recap of last week's episode. If you missed it, the podcast is up online. We had Tony D'Orazio in the studio with us, who is running for Henrietta Town Justice. We talked a little bit about the overburdensome taxes in New York State and maybe some misconceptions people had about who pays the highest percentages in taxes here. We also talked a little bit about the Cuomo and Nixon debate and how they're not – neither of them are really running for governor. One's running for president and one's running for mayor of New York City. And then we talked a little bit about education, which led to this show – and we're going to spend probably the entirety of this show speaking about education. It's a huge topic. It's a big problem here in New York. The numbers are really, really just bad. They're bad. So with that being said, people might want to call in to the show and share their stories or ask some questions because education's big. I don't even know if we're going to get through the whole thing in this show, but it's really important to talk about. So if you do want to call in, it's if you're in a 585 area code, it's 346-3000. If you're on Verizon, it's star 1040. And if you are outside of the area and you want to call in, it's 866-552-1009. So I get all those right?
Yeah, you did. Right. Good job. Yeah. By the way, before you get started, let's do a couple of shout-outs. You're streaming live on Facebook, or is Facebook still down?
It looks like Facebook went up just as we were getting started. So we're on Facebook, YouTube, and Periscope, and Twitter. So if people comment there, I will try to check the comments and respond to your questions there as well.
All right, sounds good. And also, we want to send a shout-out to our new West Side friends who are in the process of discovering us on FM 95.5 in Spencerport. The station went on actually yesterday, officially. And so we're pounding out there to North Greece and Hilton and Parma. Brockport, Spencerport, Gates, Chi-Lai, all over in that West Side area. And we welcome you to the WYSL family.
Yeah, that's awesome. Glad to have those guys brought right in. So what I want to begin this with is there's kind of a disparity here in New York in education, and people get confused when we talk about education a lot because we have college education and then we have our K-12 system. And they are two separate things. There is state schools for college, but we also have a lot of private schools. Today, I'm going to focus the majority of the conversation, if not all of it, on our K-12 system here in New York. So when you hear me talk numbers, when you hear me talk about statistics, I just want to make sure everybody's on the same page. We're talking about the public K-12 system here in New York. But I am going to start it with a story that I heard last week of a college student. And this story I did hear firsthand from somebody who works for one of our local schools. I won't say which one. I don't want to, you know, invade anybody's privacy. But they just got their fresh batch of freshmen in. And this person just happens to work on a floor. We'll call it floor number 5. Could change the stuff just a little bit to protect these people. So they work on floor five. A student comes up to them and says, "Hey, I'm trying to get to room 7004, and I can't find it anywhere." And this person realizes the student doesn't understand that the first number in the room numbers is the floor number. So they proceed to explain to this person, "Well, you know, the first number is the number of the floor. And so you're, you know, my room's 5002 because you're on the fifth floor. So you need to go to get to room 7004 to the seventh floor. And the elevators are right over here." And the student stops, looks very puzzled, and says, "Do I take the elevator up or down?" This is a true story. This happened within the last 2 weeks.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
And it could be a small, you know, it's kind of a small thing, but it's a big deal, I think. This shows kids, they're coming into college from our education system, and not that they teach you floor numbers in school, but that kind of shows where we're at today.
How old again was this kid?
Freshman. So freshman, probably 18, 19, somewhere in that neighborhood would be my guess.
A freshman in college?
College.
In college.
College,
okay.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
18, 19. Okay.
And this is one of our better schools. It probably ranked in the top in the state. Actually, they're ranked nationally as well.
This is coming off like you know, the old eyewitness news that Jimmy Kimmel used to do. And Jay Leno would go out and he says to the woman who's standing under the American flag, says, "How many stars on that flag?" And she goes, "It's moving too fast."
Yeah. You know, it's just that stuff that you would expect people pick up. And so, you know, this story was shared with me just because this person was dumbfounded that they had this conversation.
Yeah, it was just dumb. If you don't mind my saying so.
Yeah. But it really got me thinking about how we talk about a 4-year degree today takes on average 6 years to complete. So if it takes 6 years to complete a 4-year degree, we're falling short. We are falling very short. Now, some people say, well, people get part of the way through and they decide to switch majors. That does happen as well. That was the excuse when it was 5 years to get through a 4-year degree. Now we're at 6 years.
Oh, no, I don't think I think I lay it at the feet of the colleges because I think they structure it this way to milk every freaking dollar they can out of every kid and every family. I am told it's very difficult to graduate in 4 years in a 4-year college. Because of the availability of courses and scheduling, the whole thing, the deck has been stacked against you.
Yeah, and in some cases, that's true. What I'm hearing from professors, and I don't claim to know a lot of professors, I just happen to know people that work at two of the local universities, they're constantly telling me they're teaching 13th grade. These students are coming in, and if they're in their track, They're not coming prepared at all. They're coming in grossly underprepared with reading skills, with math skills. And ironically, we're going to actually talk about the numbers in a minute. It's true when you look at our test scores compared to the rest of the country. We are underpreparing our students. And so I also agree, though, that a lot of people don't look at education as a business. But private schools, that's a business model. They generate money, and the students or the parents of the students are customers, and people in education hate it when you say that. They're like, no, we're here to help the kids, but they're paying. They are technically a customer, and your business model is to have kids paying for education.
They absolutely are a customer. While we're on the subject, I just don't want somebody to feel like they've been slighted, but Roberts Wesleyan does have a 4-year guarantee.
Oh, that's great.
Which is a great program.
Very cool.
And it's not just a marketing phrase either. I mean, you go there and you apply yourself and you actually try to graduate. You'll graduate in 4 years. That's a guarantee they have.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, and I'd love to see the program because, you know, I think transparency is important for other places to be successful. So that's just a little bit about college education. I don't want to focus on that for this, but I did just want to share that little nugget of a story because it kind of sets the stage for what I think is important as far as education. So we will be back here in a few minutes, and we're going to talk about what the numbers look like today in New York State compared to the rest of the nation. So join us shortly.
Radio Free New York on the WISL stations, 1040 AM, FM 92.1 Rochester, FM 95.5 West.
Get your wheels moving. There's a car show coming to the beautiful village of Hammondsport on September 15th and 16th. It's called Wings and Wheels, and it includes a seaplane air show over Keuka Lake. Bring your car and share it with friends and fans. You'll see classic and exotic cars of all types, including vintage autos from bygone years, legendary muscle cars, and some of the finest wheels from around the world. Hammondsport is one of the prettiest villages you'll ever see. For information, it's wingsandwheelshammondsport.com. That's wingsandwheelshammondsport.com.
It's a savings stampede. Don't miss the final days of the incredible tent sale in the former East Avon Mall, where everything has got to go. Furniture, antiques, decorator items, kitchenware, electronics, games. Make a pile, make a deal. The tent outside is refilled daily, so come back and save several times. Just 2 minutes from Avon Flea Market, 5580 East Avon Road, off 390 exit 10. Look for the signs. Hurry, shop and save this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The incredible tent sale in the former East Avon
I'm all. Radio Free New York on WYSL. AM 1040, FM 92.1, and FM 95.5 West.
We are back with your host, Andrew Hollister.
Hey guys, thanks for joining us. So we're back, we're talking about education here in New York State. And we're going to talk some numbers here because numbers are important. They give you the opportunity to kind of compare things. I will go into this saying that statistics can be a great thing. Statistics can be a dangerous thing because people can twist statistics and numbers to match specifically what they're saying. I went to an independent source for a lot of these numbers, and I actually confirmed I only used numbers that I could match in more than one source. So when you hear these numbers, and maybe on the blog I'll post all the sources so you guys can check them out and look for them yourself. But the first thing I want to discuss is the cost of education in New York State. And then we're going to look at where we rank. So today in New York State, we pay over $21,000 per student on average in New York State. So what does that mean? That means some districts spend a little less, some spend more. This does include special education, which does cost more than a non-special education student. So I do want to throw that in there as well. I don't want you guys thinking that I'm trying to, you know, tell you something that's not true. This is absolutely true. And the average is spot on. Not only is this as New York State, but in my home school district, the numbers are almost exact. So the average is actually very accurate, very close. So where do we rank, right? That's the next question, because I hear from people constantly in New York, and I'm not sure where this came from. I'm sure some politician marketed this as a part of their plan or something at some point. They said, our taxes are high, but it's high because you get the best education in the country.
No,
it's not true at all. But people tell me that. And people will come to me and say, well, you know, my kid went to high school in New York. They got a good job. They're an engineer now, this and that. So the education in New York is really good. And a few things come out of that conversation. Well, where'd that kid get a job? Oh, in another state, not in New York. And how old is that kid? Oh, 40. 50, you know, so we're not talking about education.
Well,
today.
I don't know if he's old, but he had a McGuffey reader he was learning out. And let's face it, I mean, you know, it's funny because I'm 68. I saw signs of this when I was in school.
Yeah,
it was creeping. I mean, it's again the indoctrination, the progressive agenda that was being pushed. Like for example, I learned quote unquote finger quotes that FDR ended the Great Depression. Not so much.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. History itself changes a lot, right? You know, the history that they teach today is different than the history they taught even a few years ago. And those school books, they come out every year. You got to have the latest edition.
Yeah. The old one goes to the Ministry of Truth.
Yeah. Yep. And sometimes the only difference is a few lines. But then other times, history is totally different. I've seen some curriculums that their explanation of the Constitution is really scary.
Tell us about it. In what way is it scary?
So, and I don't know what school this came from. I don't know if a teacher wrote it. I don't know what, but people passing around like, hey, this is what my kid's research assignment says. And it clearly says, you know, the Second Amendment was designed for military personnel and militias only in the United States. And it's like, man, my copy of the Constitution doesn't say that at all. You know, they're trying to paraphrase things, change it.
Well, it's tricky because now with Common Core, lots of times the kids are not learning from texts. They're learning from these handouts and these materials that are either they're a boilerplate thing that's generated by the text companies, or sometimes they're things that are generated in-house in the school, and they may not be properly edited and vetted at all. They may just represent, as you're suggesting, the individual convictions of instructors in the school who could have a political bent to them.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. And I do see here there's some people listening on Facebook, so just a shout out to those people who are commenting in the feed here. Thank you so much. I see maybe the video's getting a little fuzzy. So we spend $21,000 plus per student on average in New York State. We have some of the highest school taxes in the country. But where do we sit? We sit at position 31 for K-12. So 30 other states in the nation pay less taxes than us, and their students perform better. Now, what are we talking about when we talk about students that perform better, right? How do we measure a student? Something Larry and I talk very often is that test taking is not an indicator of success. And that's not what I'm talking about here today. I'm not talking about, did these students graduate from high school and land a successful job? That's not what we're looking at. What we're looking at is, where do they stand on their math scores and where do they stand on their reading scores? If we're basing what we're spending on these scores, I want to grade our spending on these scores. So graduation rate, New York State, number 39. We are number 39 for graduation rate in New York State.
Wow.
We spend in the top three. We're number 39. Our math scores, we rank at 33, number 33. So actually a little bit better than our graduation rate, but we're below 32 other states for math scores. Reading scores, we're also at 33. So we're paying a lot of money here. And you got to question, where's that money going? And is it being used to educate our schools? I had a conversation with a parent the other day. And they brought up something they see. I don't have kids in school right now. So from a parent's perspective, they see things that I'm not always aware of. And so I'm always very interested in hearing what their feedback is. And the parent told me, I don't think our money's going towards educating my kids. And I said, oh, okay. You know, I wasn't really sure where he was going with that. He said, I think it's going to build nicer things in the school.
Oh, there's no question about it. Have you ever done this fun exercise? Have you ever looked at your school budget and gone line by line?
I did a little bit in last year's election, and I'm going to talk maybe a little bit about one number that stuck out to me the most. But there's a lot of capital improvement projects. There's a lot of, I forget what they're calling it, the beautification project, where they're just building another building.
These schools, some of these schools, I have to say, I don't mean to tar everybody with this brush, but a lot of these schools, the money that has been thrown at these facilities is unbelievable.
Yeah.
A local school here within our listening area, which will remain nameless for reasons of diplomacy, at one point they were spending $40,000 on carpeting the administrative offices. Mm. Now, I don't know what kind of carpeting they were using, but I've run a business for 31 years, and I know that the office area in this school, you could have carpeted 10 of these offices for $40,000. Another thing they wanted to do is they wanted to spend $100,000 improving the ventilation in the photo developing lab. Who develops film anymore?
Yeah, I don't know.
This was not 25 years ago, folks. This was like 7 years ago, maybe 6 years ago.
Yeah. When I looked at
$100,000 on a hydroponic garden on the roof.
Yeah, yeah. The garden I could almost support. I'd love for kids to know how, you know, grow their own food.
Fair enough.
Because they don't know how to make Easy Mac when they get into college. But, so but if they know how to make a tomato, maybe.
But you get the point. I mean, it went on and on like this. Yep. And certainly some of the I'm sure there's a rational explanation for a lot of them, for a lot of these things. But I think there's a lot of money wasted on technology.
Yeah.
On these whiteboards and all this stuff.
Technology that never gets used. That's a big thing.
I've been in open houses where our son goes to school in the Rochester Metro, and you go and you sit in the little student desks, and the instructors are there, and they're telling you what's going on in the schools. Half of those whiteboards don't work.
Yeah.
Or at least they don't work fully.
Yeah. Or the training's not there, so people don't know how to use them, so they sit there unused. And I think sometimes that stuff comes from, you have to buy this for a government grant. Because the state won't let the schools have a certain amount of money. They're worried about losing their funding every year, so they try to hoard this money. Sometimes they spend it – well, I want to say sometimes. Many times they probably spend it very poorly just to make sure that they get their funding next year.
Yeah, use it or lose it thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think it's Fairport School District right now that the state basically said you have too much money, and if you don't spend it, you're getting none. Or something along those lines.
Well, and another thing that happens when you get surgically attached to the government teat like that, and you're just used to this inflow of cash, what you see the districts doing, and towns, by the way, municipalities do this as well, is they start to sandbag the money.
Yes. Yeah.
They start putting together a kitty just in case their stipend gets cut, and that's not a proper use of taxpayer funds either.
No. I mean, I'm all for people having a reserve fund, you know, but what I'm not for is, and it should be a reserve fund that the people paying those taxes say, yeah, we want to have, you know, some set aside for a disaster or something like that or something. But when the state comes in and says, well, you know, we just want you to spend it and we want to control how you spend it. And the voters have no say in that. It's just some bureaucrat in Albany telling cannot spend their money. That's why I'm like, no, come on. Like, this district knows their people. They know that the government's trying to dangle all this money and, you know, this or that. We just got to stop that entirely.
Well, another thing you mentioned, too, is government mandated spending. And government will dangle this is a typical trick. They dangle all kinds of money out there with certain specific purposes attached to it. So you have to add a diversity officer to at a cost of $100,000 a year to vet all of your hires, whether they're faculty or whether administrators or janitors, for that matter. And if you do that, we'll give you this $250,000. So you think, well, that's not bad. We're netting $150,000. What they don't tell you is that the grant goes away after a year or two, but now you have this unfireable person on your staff, which runs up costs.
Yeah. Well, and you bring up a great point, mandates. And we actually, while Larry and I were touring the state, met a – I don't remember what position they held. It might have been a school board member for one of the southern tier counties. And they said – did you know that the mandates are so bad that we actually have a school that has twice as many administrators than teachers? We have 19 administrators.
Absolutely.
9 teachers and 5 janitors.
These schools are so top heavy now.
Yeah. Yeah. In my home school district, I looked at the numbers last year. And if I remember correctly, I don't want to say this is exact, but if I recall, administrative salaries were 60% of our $1 billion budget.
It's insane. I'm sorry, $1 billion?
It was $1 billion budget. 60% was administrative salaries. So that means that less than 40% was teacher salaries, supplies, expenses to the school. I don't know if school lunch is included in that piece of the budget or not, but we're talking 60% of the budget, even if it wasn't administrators. Just think about that. Less than 40% of your budget is being spent on education. It's a problem. It's a big problem. So we'll be back in a minute. We're going to talk where we rank with SAT scores, because that's a big thing for a lot of parents. Where do their children rank to get into a college?
Tell a friend about Radio Free New York on the WISL stations every Friday at 1. And we have several replays throughout the weekend. Radio Free New York, always on at WISL1040.com. We will be back.
You're listening to the Voice of Liberty. WYSL. AM 1040 Avon Rochester, FM 92.1 Rochester, FM 95.5 Spencerport, and WYSL1040.com everywhere.
At Victor Chevrolet, we're extending summer fun by bringing back last year's pricing. For a limited time, lease a 2019 Equinox LT all-wheel drive for just $139 a month. MSRP $31,740. Residual $29,48. Or a lease a 2018 Cruise LT for just $69 a month. MSRP $22,325. Residual $13,213. Must have current non-GM lease and household for either deal. First payment, tax, acquisition, and DMV fees all due at signing.
Save big and get ready for cold weather driving.
Lease a new 2018 Silverado All-Star Edition 1500 double cab 4x4 pickup with remote start, trailering and convenience packages, and heated seats. Only $159 a month. MSRP $46,70.
Residual $29,24.
Must have current GM lease and household. First payment, DMV, acquisition fee, and taxes when you sign. Don't miss these summertime deals. And a great selection of gorgeous used vehicles, too. Make it Victor Chevrolet. Route 96 in Victor.
Visit VictorChevrolet.com.
You're listening to Radio Free New York on the WYSL stations.
Did we mention that Andrew Hollister, your host for the most here on Radio Free New York, is running for lieutenant governor of the state on the Libertarian ticket with his fearless leader, Larry Sharp, who's going up against Governor Headcase?
Yep, that's true. We are running for, I'm running for lieutenant governor. Larry's running for governor. We're on the Libertarian ticket. And as of Wednesday, it's official, guys. We are on the ballot.
There was some question about that.
Yeah.
A little bit of low-level drama.
Yep. Yeah, I think we probably touched on it a little bit last week, but just to kind of recap on that, to get your name on the ballot, you have to collect, specifically for governor and lieutenant governor, 15,000 valid signatures from voters within the state and submit those to have your name on the ballot. So we actually collected almost 32,000 signatures. We did submit them, and some people tried to challenge them. They did. Actually, there's an attorney from the GOP, did file an objection, and they did not have any standing and any specific objections to be able to prevent us from being on the ballot. So as of Wednesday, we did announce Larry and I are officially going to be on your November 6th ballot for governor and lieutenant governor of New York State.
So no strange contortions required to vote for Sharp and Hollister.
No. And that actually brings up a question we get very often. People will often say, hey, I'm a registered Democrat. I'm registered Republican. I'm registered whatever your party is. Do I have to change my voter registration to vote for you guys on the Libertarian line? And the answer is no. For any election, you can vote for any person that you believe is correct, regardless of party lines. And that's something I encourage people to do. Don't vote based on party lines. Vote based on the person that you think is going to do the best possible job for you. So that is a question I get all the time, though. So your November 6th ballot will have Larry Sharp and myself, Andrew Hollister, on the ballot. We won't know where on the ballot we are for probably another month and a half, and then they'll put together some sample ballots. We'll publish those, and you'll be able to see where you'll find our name.
Okay, now I have to ask, is there the potential for some kind of dirty trick here where, you know, the you have to turn the ballot sheet over, and you guys are in the lower left corner in six-point type?
So maybe not specifically that, but yes, what has happened in the past, being a third party in New York State, occasionally they will put us on the same line as somebody who is not associated with us whatsoever.
That's the one I was thinking.
Yep.
So now everybody gets really confused. Explain that.
Yeah. So what you might see, say you're following the race and you like what Larry and I have to say, but maybe you're somebody else, they're, you know, totally different side of the spectrum, you totally disagree with them, you might see our name, and then right next to us, you might see their name, and by the way the ballot's designed, you might think, wait a minute, they're running on the same line together? I don't agree with this person whatsoever. And that's something Board of Elections does. It's a obscure election law. It's happened a couple times in the last 4 or 5 years. It has. I've seen ballots with it. Actually, my race last year, it happened. I was put on a line with somebody that ran for the Party of the People or something like that. And I have no association with the Party of the People. I'm not even aware of what that party is. But we were on the same lines, and people were really confused. They're like, we thought you ran on these party lines. Why were you on this line with this person? It's an obscure election law that confuses people.
People get confused. I'm confused. So mechanically, how does that work when you sit down, you have your ballot sheet, right?
Yep.
I mean, is it evident how you choose you guys and...
Yeah, so you'll still fill in the circle.
Okay.
Right? So when you look at your ballot, you'll find Larry's name. Larry's name will be in bold, right? And then I think mine will be underneath his name, just not in bold, for governor and lieutenant governor. And there'll be a little circle there. So you're going to fill in that circle. And then you don't want to fill out anything else on that line, because if you do, you invalidate your ballot. And they won't tell you. You put it in the machine, it just gives you a little check. It doesn't tell you who you voted for. It does not tell you whether your ballot was automatically invalidated or not. You just get a little check, which is something I think New York State could drastically improve on. You should have a receipt that tells you who you voted for and that your ballot was successfully
cast. Does that take place in other states?
Yes. Yes. Some states, you get like a little printed receipt of everybody who you voted for.
I'm very sorry. I smell like the path is being laid here for massive voter fraud. I know I'm not alone in that suspicion. What was wrong with the voting machines, other than the fact they were big and cumbersome?
You know, I couldn't tell you.
Hackable.
My guess is that with technology advancing, they wanted a way to validate ballots easier, faster, more streamlined. That's my assumption. As being somebody in technology, I would look at that and go, yeah, digital voting seems great. We could streamline it. We could make it efficient. You also got a lot of security to worry about.
I was going to say, but at what cost? I think there's bigger issues than the speed at which we tabulate these numbers.
Yep.
I mean, I know that you got the drooling, panting media that just wants to run out the door, be the first to report who won.
Yes.
But other than that, what's the necessity for speed? I mean, isn't accuracy the real concern here?
I believe so. Absolutely. You know, it's interesting. Somebody was telling me they came from the Middle East, how their elections go and how they prevent voter fraud. And I was like, I'm interested in hearing about this. Like, what do you guys do?
45 semi-auto, I think.
When you walk in and vote, you dip your finger in a bowl of ink.
Yeah, right.
And that stuff doesn't come off for like a week straight. And they're like, we guarantee nobody votes twice just by that. And so,
okay. I'm not quite sure I follow that, but I mean, it's great that I know I see a lot of iconic photos of the poor benighted citizens of the Middle East holding up blue fingers. And that's great, but I don't think it's necessarily a guarantor of freedom from voting fraud.
Well, for that type of voter fraud, I guess I would say. Yeah. I have heard from people locally here in New York who have worked the polls, and maybe at one point I can bring one of them into the studio here and they can explain from their perspective the fraud that they've witnessed. The way it's been explained to me is that voter fraud happens, but it doesn't happen without both parties knowing about it and without them being okay with it, because you have to have a Republican and a Democrat at the poll watching the poll. And that voter fraud absolutely happens. And when it's reported, it's looked the other way.
But this is just go on YouTube, and there's a lot of videos there that are very scary. And obviously, they can be faked. But just the mere presence of poll watchers of Democrat and Republican persuasion that's not a guarantee either, because I think that voter fraud can take place in a way which is not apparent to the naked eye.
Could be. So
in a tabulation, for example.
Yeah, yeah. So I would say we should bring somebody in. Let's quiz them on it, because there's stuff that probably happens in the background that we don't know, like how they transport the files, who's present when they get opened and like that sort of thing that we should hear from somebody about.
Stalin said it doesn't matter who votes, it matters who counts the votes. That's
yes.
exactly right. And
yep.
and the scary, I mean, the content and the scary videos, just go to YouTube and search voter fraud voting machines. And under the eye of watchful experts, you have like six people that come in, two vote Democrat, four vote Republican, and the machine tabulates all for Democrats.
Oh, with the machines, yes.
Yes, with the electronic machines I'm talking about.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, there's been cases of that all over, and the excuses and the explanations are disturbing.
Yeah, they're laughable.
To say the least. Yeah.
Absolutely. If it could be funny, which it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's very disappointing. So let's swing back to education a little bit. I don't think that we're going to get through this this whole piece today, but I do want to hammer a few things because we haven't talked yet about what we can do about education. But let's talk just SAT scores, right? That's what a lot of parents look at. That's what schools kind of teach towards as like this is your ticket into college is the SAT scores. So the national average for SAT scores is 1,060. New York State, we're just a hair below average in SAT scores. So we're at 1,052. But once again, we spend a ton of money and resources to get ourselves below average. So reading and writing, we score on average at 528. National average is 533. Math, we score at 523. National average, 527. And these numbers are taken by a couple of college websites, also some college prep sites. The numbers all match, so they're publicly posted. We rank below average in other things, too. Our economic prosperity, we rank number 35.
Surprised it's that high.
Yeah, it is. It's surprising with how high our taxes are, how many people we're losing a year, that we made it as high as 35. Opportunity, though, which is a little bit different than economic prosperity, that's you know your ability to get a job within the state, we're 43. So that rings true. Yeah, that rings true for a lot of people I talk with who are struggling to find a job and thinking about leaving the state. Fiscal stability, 28. Quality of life, 37. Employment, number 40. So we are really, really struggling as far as national averages go all across the board. And many of these things tie into education and what follows with education. National average, so I actually mentioned that we spend on average $21,000 per student on education. The national average is almost $11,000 on the nose.
Holy moly. Half of what we spend.
Not even close. Yep. And we are below average. So that's really just really disappointing. Just to see those, the numbers are staggering. I don't know, you know it's bad, and then you look at it and you go, wow, like it's really, really bad.
And one of the most poignant and important metrics, too, by the way, is personal freedom, where consistent with previous years, New York has ranked once again last.
Yep.
We're 50th.
Yep. We're number 50. And if you saw Larry Sharp on the Joe Rogan show in California, I think it was 2 days ago now, Joe Rogan, I don't remember what his exact phrase was, but this is a man in California who he basically said, I'm so lucky to not be in New York. Like the guy from California.
Joe Rogan, he's a phenomenon now.
He is.
Wasn't he on one of the reality shows? Wasn't he like eating like bugs or something 10 years ago?
It could be. I'm not sure.
Well, some reality show.
He's got a huge following.
Now he's got this gigantic following. And I guess he had Elon Musk and they were smoking dope together last night.
I believe that's probably true based on all the comments I've heard about, you know, his show and how things go and the comments I saw going through YouTube that he has a very big following and he's a very interesting individual and he's happy that he is not in New York with the rest of us and he's somebody who lives in California. So that just shows you really how bad the freedoms are here in New York because they can't have straws in California.
And let's not forget the reason why.
We're not going to make America great again. It was never that great. We have not reached greatness.
Oh, yeah, because we haven't reelected you yet. I guess that's the... That's how we measure that. We'll be back with Andrew Hollister here on Radio Free New York.
Brand new for you and your dog at Avon Feed and Supply. Tim Cole and his team are proud to introduce Victor's Super Premium Dog Foods. Top quality with several varieties to choose from. Victor Dog Foods offer scientifically advanced nutrition, promoting great digestive and immune system health for the dog in your life. Choose from beef, chicken, or salmon and ocean fish-based foods, plus grain-free active dog and puppy food. Victor's Super Premium Dog Foods incorporate strong meat-based proteins instead of inferior plant proteins. Organic minerals and vitamins, including Zinpro, never synthetic. And some brands include added glucosamine to help those hindquarters. Joint health promoting Victor Dog Foods are 5-star rated in Dog Food Advisor. Great nutrition is their passion. Get more info at victorpetfood.com and choose your dog's new food today at Avon Feed and Supply. West Main at the bottom of the hill, just west of the circle, Avon Feed and Supply.
Radio Free New York on WYSL. AM 1040, FM 92.1, and FM 95.5 West.
Once again, we welcome everybody listening to the new iteration of WYSL on the west side of the Metro, 95.5 FM in Spencerport. Here's Andrew Hollister again.
Hey, guys. Thanks for joining us. So here we are. We talked a lot about where New York State stands today on education. And there's something that I want to throw out here because we're talking about where we rank in education and how bad it is. And I also want to put on here that we have some amazing, amazing teachers in this state. Some amazing teachers that had a huge positive impact on my life and helped me through school. And I know countless other children in our state. So I don't want people to hear this thinking that that this is an attack on teachers. It's not. It's a discussion about where our system is and how we need to change the system. And I'll give you a great example. When teachers talk with Larry and I, and they ask us a very direct question, how are you going to help us? How are you going to help us? And what we have to tell the teachers is by getting rid of administrators, by doing things like removing the mandate for Common Core, by letting you identify as the teacher which students should learn which ways, because nobody knows better than the teacher. No bureaucrat in Albany knows how every child should and can learn. But you know who does? The teachers know. The teachers in the classroom know that Johnny learns with the visual method and that Susie learns hands-on, and they need to be taught differently. I don't care how the students grow up learning 2 plus 2 is 4, but when they leave, I want them to know that 2 plus 2 is 4 and that that can translate into balancing a checkbook, understanding interests, and being successful in life in ways other than what you see in test taking. So I just want to make sure that as we're having this discussion, that people understand that, yeah, absolutely, there's going to be bad teachers out there, just like any other profession. But by and large, my experience has been that most teachers truly care about their students, and their hands are tied in terms of education. They're given mandates to teach to a specific curriculum that doesn't necessarily line up with how the students learn. Common Core is a great example of that. Common Core has been rammed into the school districts for federal funding purposes, forcing teachers to teach curriculum that isn't effective for the majority of the population. Now, here's the truth, and I'll certainly put this on the table. About 6% of the student population does learn better with the Common Core methods. But that's 6%. Why are we forcing teachers to put that on the whole student population? If there's a student in the classroom that they're going to learn the Common Core math way, which doesn't make sense to me, but if that student learns it and they're successful with that in life, then that one student, the teacher should be able to use that. But for the other students that are not going to be able to learn that way, they should be able to learn with a way that makes sense to them, that fits their learning style.
Well, the other way of looking at that, too, by the way, that's a stunning statistic. What that means is it's unsuccessful 94% of the time.
Correct.
Do you buy a car at a dealership that's rated by Consumer Reports 94% unacceptable? I don't think so.
I sure hope
so. So why are we foisting this upon our kids? Yeah. And the thing that particularly scares me, one of the biggest movie hit of the summer was The Incredibles 2. I don't know if you saw it, Andrew.
I did not.
But there's a scene where Bob Parr, who is the superhero dad, is helping his son with homework, with math. And we've all had this experience now, haven't we, folks? The little one's going, no, Dad, that's not the way you do it. And Bob Parr's like, how could math have changed? It's very telling, and it's frankly concerning to me that there's a normative effect that's going on in our schools where we're now accepting this.
Yeah.
This has become so normal and so familiar to people that it becomes a gag in an animated movie.
Yeah, yeah. The thing that I think is really, really scary about this to me, as somebody who doesn't have children in the school district yet, and somebody who's fighting for change and talking with parents and teachers, is I run into people that try to defend it, not for any other reason than we will lose federal funding. And that is what's terrifying to me, because what people are literally saying is, I'm okay compromising student education as long as we get federal funds for education. Which is,
yeah, it's just the way. By the way, this is true of on all levels of government.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go to your town meetings. Go to your zoning board meetings. There's always, from time to time, some issue that comes up that says we can get fill in the blank $50,000, $75,000 if we do some cockamamie thing.
Yep.
But there's strings that are always attached to that.
Yeah.
That's what you have to bear in mind.
And then you tie yourself into the same system of, well, now we're going to lose this funding that we got used to having if we don't continue to do this bad thing or this inefficient thing or this just poorly put together thing. Our children, our students deserve better. They deserve to have education, especially at the dollars that we're paying for it. We shouldn't be 33 on the list. We should be number one. We're spending more than everybody else. We should be number one. And for anybody to say that we should be okay with what we're spending because of the quality of education that our students are getting, they just truly don't understand the state.
I'll give you a quick example, which will maybe bring this into focus. Where the radio station is located, we're in the town of Livonia in Livingston County. Livonia happens to have shoreline on Kinesis Lake, one of the Finger Lakes.
Yep.
Went to a town board meeting, and a resolution was introduced for the town to accept federal funding, I think it was EPA or through some program or whatever, for a septic pumping station at the state launch where people go to launch their boats to go out and have some fun on the water. And so I think we're going to get $75,000 if we went along with this program. The problem is that Kinesis Lake has a no toilets law. So if you have a boat that's big enough to have a bathroom in it, the toilet has to be disabled and it has to be fastened shut or you can't run it on the lake.
Yeah.
So I stood up and I said, well, wait a minute. What message are we sending to people if we have a septic pumping station? Yeah, well, we're going to get $75,000.
Yeah.
And fortunately, we were all able to prevail upon the town not to go for the $75,000 grant because it would have a deleterious effect perhaps on water. And I think that's more often than not the case with these grant programs, that the downsides outweigh the any potential benefit.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, too, because people typically look at grant money as free money. They really do.
Never.
They go, look at this free money. We have to go after this. And I will hear people say the term free money. And I stop and say, well, where's the money coming from? You know, if it's this thing, oh, well, it's coming from the state. Okay, who pays state taxes?
We don't pay it.
It's our money. Yeah, there's nothing free about it.
It's just like, you know, so you got paid and you have $100 and you put 70 in one pocket and 30 in the other.
Yeah.
So then you spend the 70 and you go, oh boy, now I don't have any money. Oh, look,
free money.
I've got free money in my right pocket.
Yep.
$30. Yep. I'm rich.
Yeah. Yeah, and the problem with these grants is in many cases, you're right, there's strings attached. And I see this with some grants that sometimes we help customers with. They apply, they get a grant, and they say, hey, we get a grant, it includes technology. For those who don't know, I run a technology firm in Rochester, and some of the things we do, we sell computers, we sell servers and network infrastructure. So these customers come to us, hey, we got this grant, we want to spend this money, and the stipulations attached almost always is like, yeah, you're going to get $5,000 or $10,000 for this grant to spend on technology, but the requirements that you have to carry out for the next 5 years are going to far exceed what this grant is going to give you. You think you're getting $10,000. It's going to require you to spend another 20 over the next 5 years. And, if you don't do that, then you also pay back the grant money. So now you're in the whole 30. There's usually strings attached some way or fashion. Absolutely.
No such thing as a free lunch, folks. They said it in the Depression, and it's still true 80 years later.
Yep. So we've only got a few minutes left here. We did not cover all of education, so part two on education will be next week. I've got to fit two quick things in for you guys, though. First is our sharp update on the campaign. So we mentioned we're officially on the ballot. We have a rally in Rochester September 15th. Shannon Joy is going to be our MCE, so we're very excited about that. It's going to be at the German House in the South Wedge of Rochester. No fee to attend, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Show up, have a good time, meet me, meet Larry, and we're going to have a couple great speakers there. It's going to be awesome. Also, for small business owners, and you could be medium-sized, large business owners, any business owners, you don't even have to be a business owner. You could work for a business. We're having a business networking event September 19th. It is going to be at 1477 Long Pond Road. More details on the website, on Facebook. That's going to be 4 to 6 p.m. We're going to talk about our business policies in New York. We're going to talk about taxes, especially the income tax. So you're welcome to come network with us, other business owners, and just hear the platform, hear what's about, ask us some really, really hard questions. So that's what's going on with the campaign.
That's the 19th, which is a Wednesday.
Yes, 19th is a Wednesday.
And do you have the time again?
That is 4 to 6 p.m. And now, it would not be an episode of Radio Free New York if we didn't talk about an awful, awful law. So I'm going to try to pack this in real quick for you. I'm going to bring it up. People talk about this to me all the time. It is our scaffolding law. Our scaffolding law, for those of you that don't know, poses, and this is in quotes right from the law, absolute liability for elevation-related injuries on contractors and property owners engaged in construction. And it goes on more and more. So those who want to hear this in plain English, gravity is your fault. Gravity is your fault. The employee does not have to harness in. That liability still falls on the employer or the property owner. Now, before running this campaign, I knew nothing about this law. I'm not in construction. But the more I learn about it, the more it's just really, really awful for our state. I've got stuff from Times Union here, New York Post, various articles that talk about how our state construction can sometimes cost three times more because of this law. We're paying three times more in taxes on projects because this law makes insurance rates so high because it places that absolute liability on either the company, their insurance policy, or the property owner in New York State when construction is done.
Yeah, this is it's a matter of workers' compensation premiums. And this is, by the way, one of the factors, certainly not the only factor, I hasten to add, but one of the factors that chased our professional soccer team out of Rochester, the Rhinos.
Yeah.
Because they could not afford, they couldn't get coverage.
Yes. Well, and we've got Cuomo, and this doesn't relate to scaffold law, but it does relate to carry insurance, where they've eliminated carry insurance
for firearms
in New York State.
Yes.
For firearms owners. Yeah, absolutely. So New York State makes it nearly impossible or totally cost prohibitive to get many insurances to do business in New York State. So that is our awful law. There's a ton of information about this. It's New York State, ranked 50th for freedom year after year after year.
And highest in taxes. Yep. And 14% of our population has disappeared since the year 2000.
Yep. Yep, over 1 million people have left.
All right, Andrew Hollister, candidate for New York State Lieutenant Governor. Give them some information where they can get more valuable info about your campaign and see what you guys are all about.
Absolutely. So on Facebook, search Larry Sharp for New York, Andrew Hollister for a new New York. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. Search Larry Sharp, Andrew Hollister. We'll show up. There's lots of information there. And I'll catch you guys next week.